From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
The Nationals held their own at the election, but they're finding the terrain post-election rough going. The drought is not just hitting their constituents hard, but Scott Morrison has taken ownership of the issue, rather crowding out the Nationals at a political level. The fall of Barnaby Joyce early last year has also left a party room that remains very divided. This week, tensions blew up in that party room after Pauline Hanson last week managed to obtain a bring forward of a dairy code that Agriculture Minister Bridget McKenzie had told her national colleagues couldn't be finalised until well into next year. Some Nationals were furious at McKenzie, of whom they were already critical, and there were even mutterings about her position as deputy leader. All in all, Nationals leader and Deputy Prime Minister Michael McCormack, who joins us today, faces some testing times. Michael McCormack, let's start with the drought. Does more need to be done?
We're going to be doing more, Michelle. We've certainly got discussions happening at the moment as to what more assistance and help we can provide. As I go out and about in the communities, appreciating that my region is very, very dry, perhaps not nearly as dry as some areas in northwest New South Wales.
This is around Wagga
indeed,
in New South
Queensland.
Wales.
Yes, I'm from Wagga Wagga and of course the Riverina, right up to Parkes and Forbes, where it's far worse than perhaps Wagga Wagga is, but it's not nearly as bad as some other areas of the country. Farmers are telling me that we've done a lot, and those farmers who've accessed the assistance and not self-assessed and gone on and seen what assistance is available, they've been generally happy with what assistance has been provided by the Commonwealth and indeed by the state. But of course, we need to continually monitor the drought. We need to continually talk to our farmers, to our to organisations within country communities, such as the Country Women's Association, such as Rotary, and continue to get that handle of where things are going and what more we can do.
So there will be a major statement or a number of measures, one after the other?
Well, I think it probably needs to be a number of measures, but bear in mind, when it does rain, and it will, that's not going to solve the drought for the here and now. Even if we had a drought of biblical Noah proportions, that's still not going to solve all the problems for the here and now. Indeed, it's going to take not just months but years for some communities to recover. Indeed, for many farmers, this is probably the last straw for them, and sadly, they will exit what they've been doing in some cases for generations. But for others, they will rebuild, they will regroup, they will restructure, and they will go on to bigger and better things.
So can we, though, expect an overarching statement?
Well, what we'll be seeing, we've obviously got discussions going at the moment. We've got a dedicated Minister for Drought in David Littleproud. We'll be discussing it at a cabinet level. Yes, there will be more assistance and more help. There's absolutely no question that we need to do some more. And obviously, when sowing season comes, for many farmers, that's March, April, when the winter harvests go in. If it hasn't rained or it doesn't look like it's going to rain at that time, well, we'll need to obviously refocus and readdress the issue again then.
But the more assistance that you're talking about will be long before that, will be in coming weeks, will it?
Yes.
Now, one of the problems does seem a lack of coordination between federal and state governments. For example, wouldn't it be useful for the federal government to top up the state provisions to help with, say, transport for people to send their breeding stock for adjustment to where there is grass? Do you think that there needs to be more coordination?
Well, I think the coordination is there, and I know there are a number of people who are helping with that coordination, and whether that's at the political level, the bureaucratic level, indeed even the organisational level through such organisations as National Farmers Federation, New South Wales Farmers, VFF, AgForce in Queensland, that is actually happening, and it's already certainly been happening. I know Major General Stephen Day did a good job as the National Drought Coordinator. I know we're about to release his report.
When will that be?
In a couple of weeks, when Cabinet has considered it. And look, and I know there's been a lot of criticism as to why haven't you released the report, but we wanted to do it in conjunction with the NFF. Obviously, we've had some very productive meetings with them. But I know that some people are also at a national media level getting very exercised about, cattle being fed, stock being watered, the sheep, we're going to the abattoirs in far too many numbers, all of that sort of thing. And I recently spoke to an abattoir processor who told me that the number of females has now tipped over. It's generally about 45%. It's up to 55%. So obviously that's the breeding stock for the future. So that is an issue. But let's not forget that the federal government is responsible for farmers' welfare, and we've been absolutely measuring up to what we need to do in that regard. Fodder and transport subsidies and those sorts of things have always been the remit of the states. And whilst farmers can, yes, perhaps say, gee, does it really matter where the money comes from? We need to not abrogate our responsibilities. We need to absolutely make sure that we are responsible for what we are responsible for, and we are doing that. Pleased to say the state government is doing what it needs to do as well. There can always be more done. What we also can't do is upset the market such that when government ever enters a market, say the fodder market, it just pushes the price up. And there are some farmers, I spoke to one on the weekend, who had just made $11,000 out of moving a truck, albeit a very big truck, of hay from my area to Candalow. And so, for those farmers, that's their income. So if government enters the fray too much, and indeed, it upsets their ability to earn an income when they can't actually put a crop in themselves. So they've been a little bit lucky in as much as the crop they have planted, they've had to cut to hay, but they can then on-sell that hay to areas where they need feed. And so,
but there would still be a market for hay, given the situation. Wouldn't it be more economic to move the animals to adjustment rather than moving?
And look, that is already happening, Michelle, and I know it's happening
in a limited way at state level.
But it is happening, and farmers are making sure that if there is feed in another area, in another district, that they're taking advantage of those options available to them. And obviously, stock for some farmers is everything that they have. It's their only means of income because they actually can't put a crop in. And for some, well, they're just stock producers at any rate. And so making sure that their breeding herd is there and will be still there after the drought ends, and it will end, is so vital for their operations and for their businesses.
Now, the NFF, which has just released its drought policy, has proposed assistance for farmers to leave the land. Do you support this? And are the many farmers, do you think, running very marginal operations in marginal areas that should get off? By the same token, land prices are quite high, I think, at the moment, aren't they? So is government money justified?
What I'd say to those farmers who are reaching that decision as to whether they stay on the land or whether they, as you put it, get off, they need to absolutely make sure they don't reassess, self-assess. They need to absolutely make sure that they consult their families foremost, that they talk to rural financial counsellors, they talk to their accountants, their banks, they take every bit of good advice available before they take that ultimate step and then look at what the future might hold. I appreciate for the National Farmers Federation this would be a very difficult call to make, and I spoke with Fiona Simpson, the President, and the CEO, Tony Marr, just last night about this on the very day before they released their report. And that's a difficult decision and outcome for the NFF to reach, the fact that encouraging farmers or indeed calling for that exit strategy. That's not the usual way, but this isn't the usual drought. This is, as many farmers tell me, the worst drought that they've ever encountered, and some of those farmers have been on the land for 60 plus years. So it's tough, it's tight. And federal assistance, you ask? Well, yes, the federal government and indeed state governments would have to look at what readjustment, what exit strategies we could assist with. Indeed, we've done it with the car industry in Adelaide and in Melbourne. We've done it through diversifying interests in irrigation areas. We've done it in other industries where there's been, well, the tobacco industry, that's another one that did receive, or people in that industry did receive exit money. And so, yes, we'd have to look at it.
But in many ways, this is different, isn't it? Because this is not closing down an industry. These farms would be consolidated into bigger holdings. So what would happen is that you'd lose some smaller farmers and get bigger properties.
Not in every case, Michelle. And I know when we sold my father's farm in 2010, indeed, the farm was broken into two. I'm not quite sure the buyer of the house block, Robert Nixon, how he is getting on with the small holding around him. It's only about 200 or 300 acres, but indeed Robert Golash, who bought the rest of the farm, merged it into the property that he already has. But the fact is, in some cases, these farms are still selling for high prices, and the farmers around them, or indeed new buyers into the market, it's still affordable. While still there are some very good prices being realised for land in drought-stricken areas, because people understand that there is going to be a future for agriculture. I read a report not that long ago which suggested that the average age of the Australian farmer was about 67 now, but is going to dip in about 10 years to about 38, and that's not just because of the number of farmers exiting the land, perhaps, but because of the number of younger people coming into it, obviously. The maths obviously equates to that. But the number of women also who are taking up the land in their own right. And people see a future in farming. I know there's a lot of despair at the moment. I know there's a lot of heartache. I get that. I see it every day of the week. But the fact is, there is also a future, and that's encouraging.
Now, you've said that this exit proposal will have to be considered, but what about the other proposals from the NFF?
Yeah, well, look, we'll consider all those. Many of them we are already doing, and I know the NFF represents the farming body. I know it certainly understands farming as well as politics, and they get that nexus. Fact is, we are already doing some of and much of what the NFF has suggested that we ought to be doing.
They've talked about rate relief. They've talked about payroll subsidies.
And indeed, again, you know, states have to come to the party there. States have to, they are the ones, state governments are the ones who collect the money, the revenue from payroll tax, always have. And when it comes to rate relief, again, I can't emphasise enough, the states are the one that run local governments. And, you know, when it comes to merging local governments, they're the ones who make ultimately that decision. It's not the Commonwealth.
Let me now turn to the Nationals. Are you disappointed you've had so little clear air since becoming leader?
Well, I've tried to always accent the positive. I'm a positive person. And, you know, we've done some good delivery as far as the Murray-Darling Medical School, as far as getting more money into the National Water Infrastructure Development Fund, $500 million in that regard. Indeed, making sure that Dungowan Dam and Wyangla Dam Wall are being raised are things that we've fought for and things that we've achieved. We've actually had some good delivery. I'm always accenting the positive. Look, you can get down in this place. You can always be looking over your shoulder and wondering when the next challenge is going to come from, or you can just get on with your job and be as positive as possible and get the delivery done. You know, people outside Canberra, they don't want to read about politicians fighting amongst themselves. They don't actually care who does the delivery or who announces the delivery. They just want the delivery done.
Now, before we get to the more recent events, why is there so much agitation in the Nats these days? Is it a north-south thing that the Queenslanders think, well, they're the big numbers in the party room and yet they don't have a leadership position, leader or deputy?
Well, politics is always going to be robust, and indeed the leadership, be it the actual leader or the deputy leader, is the gift of the party room. I'm absolutely privileged, humbled and honoured to be the leader of the National Party. That was the gift of the party room. I never take that for granted. For Bridget McKenzie, I know she's the same. That was a gift of the party room, and so long as the party room wants to place their faith in myself, indeed, as long as they want to place the faith in Bridget McKenzie, we'll do the best job that we can.
Some of your people, of course, are really angry at Bridget McKenzie giving the concession to Pauline Hanson last week, bringing forward the dairy code when she told her colleagues that it would take a long time. I can understand that this was part of ending Pauline Hanson's strike on voting in the Senate, but did the Nationals' leadership shoot itself in the foot by this deal?
Perhaps in hindsight, if we had have been, I suppose, better informed and known that this was imminent, we could have gone out and fought for it, because we've been fighting for it for many months, bringing forward the code. The code's been brought forward by a matter of weeks. Look, at the end of the day, as far as dairy farmers are concerned, the
months, actually.
Well, okay, months then, but not that many months. The fact is, it is actually getting done. And for dairy farmers, the outcome is the only thing that's important. It doesn't matter the fact that who might have announced it. The Nationals have been agitating for this. Pauline Hanson's styming the Senate was problematic for the coalition, for the government, and unfortunate. At least in this parliament, there's not that many negotiations having to be taken to get good legislation through. Sometimes the Senate is a roadblock to getting the government's agenda passed, and you know, the fact is, we do need to negotiate with Pauline Hanson, with Rex Patrick, with Jackie Lambie, to make sure that we get legislation through the Senate.
And so what should you have done? You should have negotiated but then been the ones to announce it, or you shouldn't have given in this instance?
Well, it would have been nice for some of those who have been agitating for the dairy code for months. People such as David Gillespie, Lou O'Brien, I know for them it's been a very, very important issue. For all of us, it's been an important issue, but particularly those people who've got a real stake in this and really been agitating for this, been aware that it was negotiations were underway, so they could have gone out into their own electorates and talked about the agitation that they've done and the fact that something close was at hand would have been good. But look, politics, as we all know, and you've been here longer than most of us, it's very demanding. And sometimes calls don't get made when they need to be made, because we're in meetings, because we're held up, because we're tied up, because people aren't available when we need to get hold of them. And I understand. You know, just take Senate estimates this week. I mean, many of our senators come here at 6 o'clock in the morning and aren't going home until midnight. And, you know, for me, that's the usual working day anyway. But the fact is, calls, unfortunately, weren't made to the right people at the right time, and it was one of those issues which just got slipped through the cracks, and obviously we know what's happened.
Well, talking about calls not being made, there was the problem also of your press conference with Bridget McKenzie and other colleagues coinciding with the Prime Minister.
I didn't have a problem with that at all.
On radio about the drought measure.
Well, sure, but the Prime Minister went on 2SM, so he was covering the radio. We had all a bank of television cameras there, making sure that it was screened, certainly on Sky News Live. Fact is, we've covered the radio, we've covered the television. I'm not quite sure why anybody would be upset
but with the
fact
that we covered... But the Prime Minister's office didn't know about the press conference.
Well, and perhaps, again, the call hadn't been made. I didn't call that press conference, by the way. I took part in it.
That was
I led from the front. Well, look, the call just wasn't made, and certainly I know for the future those calls will be made. But I suppose, too, at the end of the day, and that's just to coordinate press conferences to make sure that people aren't going out and getting the television cameras all at the same time, which actually didn't happen on this instance. But, you know, you watch the 6 o'clock bulletins that night. Well, the Nationals were front and centre of that farm household assistance announcement.
More generally, though, I think there's a feeling that Scott Morrison has owned this issue and that the Nationals have been a bit in the shadows of the Prime Minister. Shouldn't you be out more to the fore on the drought issue?
Well, I am always. Well, I am always, and I know our members are always, but think back to the days when John Howard was the Prime Minister, and obviously we had the Millennium Drought. And certainly I can well recall him going out to those parched paddocks with John Anderson, with Mark Vaile. Any announcement, he was, as the Prime Minister, as the person with arguably the largest megaphone in the country, and the leader of the nation, he was out there front and centre, making sure that the government's message was getting out there, and certainly the announcements that were being made by the person who was running the country.
He's remembered, though, as being very sharing when it came to the Nationals.
And Scott Morrison has been very sharing too. Indeed, look at the National Water Infrastructure Development Fund. Fact is, I convinced him that we needed to put more money into that. The fact is, let's not forget, Scott Morrison went to a drought community as his very first task, on his very first, weekday, as Prime Minister. We went up to Quilpie together. We do things together. We're in a coalition together, and people should remember that. He's doing an outstanding job as Prime Minister, and let's not forget, it's only been 5 months since the election. The election, many thought, we couldn't, shouldn't, or wouldn't win. Well, we did win, and we're getting on with the job. And one thing that people told me in the lead up to that election, if there was one thing they wanted, it was stability. And another thing was unity. Well, we are providing that stability, that unity, and that certainty for people. And look, out there in the burbs and out there in the regions, people just want to see the government delivering. And they are seeing that. And honestly, if the Prime Minister goes to a drought community, whether it's Quilpie, whether it's in the west of New South Wales, or indeed whether it's the flood situation that we had at Cloncurry and beyond, people like to see the Prime Minister. I know when Julia Gillard came to Wagga Wagga during the floods when she was Prime Minister, people love to see the leader of the nation there. And look, I've been out and about. I've been doing press conferences every other day, talking about what we need to do, how we need to do it, and making sure that people knew of the assistance available. But we do need to also remember that we are in a coalition government, that Liberals and Nationals are working together in harmony to make sure that we get the delivery on the ground for the people who matter. And that's the most important thing. It's not who announces it. It's the fact that the outcomes are being realised for the people, the battlers, the strugglers, the farmers.
Do you think, though, the Nationals need to be a bit more assertive in this term?
Well, I think it's also important that we're not being seen to be argumentative all the time. And I say again, people want
You're
stability
not being too
and
nice.
Unity. No, I'm never too nice. And and if you ask Scott Morrison the same question, we have our arguments behind closed doors. Well, I won't say arguments. Let's just term them differences of opinion. And you know, sometimes we just agree to disagree. But at the end of the day, the outcomes are the thing that are important. And you know, people probably forget that when Scott became the Liberal leader, that was at about lunchtime, 12 o'clock on that Friday. He didn't go to Yarralumla to get sworn in until about 6:15 that night. That's because we sat there and we worked out what sort of leadership, what sort of coalition we were going to have. Well, if I had have been a soft touch, a pushover, well, he would have been out there at 1 o'clock. When he probably wanted to, when the comm cars were ready to go.
I don't think we've seen that agreement, though.
You won't see the agreement either. It's between him and I and between our parties, and that's where it should be. Look, at the end of the day, that's an agreement for the betterment of this nation, to build a better Australia, and that's what Scott and I are doing every day of the week. We are like-minded people, but we are different people, and we get on, 99.9% of the time. When we disagree, we will disagree behind closed doors, but the overall outcome will be for the benefit of Australia. And certainly, for my point of view, it's regional Australia. We've got a very good Prime Minister at the moment, and let me tell you, he is a Prime Minister also, like me, focused on regional Australia, and that's so important. I said during the election campaign, give Scott Morrison another term, he will be one of the great Prime Ministers of the modern era, and I know he's going to prove that.
Michael McCormack, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Always a pleasure.
And that's all from this podcast. Thank you to my producer, Rashina Farooq. We'll be back with another interview soon, but goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.